Welcome to the Pop Culture Cosmos.
And we're back with another episode of the Pop Culture Cosmos. It's Gerald Glassford coming right back at you here for the Pop Culture Cosmos. Inside sports, fantasy football, and the Lakers fast break. We truly appreciate you checking out all of our great shows. And if you can, please give us that 5-star review wherever you get your podcasts. Plus, if you could like, share, subscribe today to get the latest notifications on when we go live on the air with the latest state of pro wrestling, like I just did last week. If you haven't caught that, John Orlando from the PVD cast and I did our first tag team wrestling promo. Got to go ahead and hear that on the state of pro wrestling. Plus also as well, Pop Culture Cosmos, Melinda Barkhouse, Ross and I on the PCC Multiverse and more. So go ahead and catch it by subscribing today to all of us here at the Pop Culture Cosmos. But it wouldn't be a Pop Culture Cosmos without my good friend. He is the evil mastermind behind HappyHoarderCollectibles.com and the Happy Hoarder Collectibles. He is a man perplexed by the continuous uproaring and price for movies concessions. It is my good friend. It is Josh Peterson. What's up, man?
What is up? All right. So, yeah, you just hit a sore spot for me. So, me and the girls went on Monday to see the Demon Slayer. The Demon Slayer movie. I don't know if you call it a movie. It's like, it was, you know, it's the.
My daughter and I have been catching up on that on Netflix. We just got through the Entertainment District.
Oh, nice. All right. So, what are your thoughts? What do you think? Do you think it holds up compared to the first season? The magic of that first season?
They just dragged out that battle for episode after episode. I thought that was not a wise choice.
Yeah.
Personally. But it was pretty good. It was, I'd say maybe not as compelling as the first two seasons, but yeah, just the way they dragged that main battle out so long was against that upper level demon. Or demons is probably not the best of choices there.
Yeah, and it's weird too because every time, I mean, and some people see this as a good thing, some people see it as a bad. I think it kind of removes you from the action, but every time one of those demons is about to die, they go into this like really, really long backstory on, you know, back when they're human. So kind of it ruins the pacing just a little bit. I see why they do it and adds like depth to some of these characters, but it'd be cool if they did it beforehand, you know, like have them have a moment of reflection, look back on their lives. But I guess when, you know, that whole thing, when you die, your life flashes before your eyes or whatever.
And
but,
in this case, it literally does in Demon Slayer.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it's, I don't know, it's going at a pretty strong pace. I think what you had said was a complaint that a lot of people had with the Sword Village arc was that they had these fight scenes that literally went on and on and on. As you get to close to some of the ending episodes, they go from being 20-minute episodes to about, you know, 45 minutes to an hour and 10-minute episode. So, and they do that, you know, that same exact thing. So the movie was fine, you know. And
what exactly is in Demon Slayer? Why do we have to go see it if we're Demon Slayer fans?
So this is actually, if you have not, they do a quick recap of things over the seasons, and then they do, or a quick recap of like the, what we call it, the previous arcs, and then they show you the very last episode of the last season, which is about, it's a good 45 minutes.
Okay.
And they show you the first episode of the new season, which is another good, I'll say 30 to 40 minutes. And then that's kind of it. So if you want to watch the latest episode of this new season, like 3 weeks before it comes out, you do it. You can go to the theaters to do it because I don't think it start. I don't think they're actually showing these new episodes until April.
Okay.
If you want to catch it before everybody else and like just, you know, because you're a Demon Slayer fan, this is your opportunity to do it. But I think it's a very limited run, if I remember correctly. It's only in theaters for like a week or 2 weeks.
Okay. Make sure we catch it here in the next week then.
Yeah. But I want to talk about concession prices, man. Like it was always expensive, you know, and don't get me wrong. Cause I worked at a movie theater fresh out of high school. I remember, you know, they're charging $7-$8 for a drink and a bucket of popcorn. If you wanted to do like the combo, it was like $20, but I remember that, but now it's astronomical. It's like, it's like $5 to $10 more than what it once was. So this is something, you know, my wife laughed at me, but I went into the theater to we ordered food, and I saw on the combos, you know, up on the top is like, there's one that was like two drinks and two popcorns and two candies. I had to add on another drink for, one of the kids. And I looked at I was like, oh, $31. That's not bad. Price of concession has gone down. Turns out it was not the price of concessions. It was the calorie count. And so I'm looking at this. I'm like, oh, and then all of a sudden he rings me up at $50. I'm like, wow, that's insane to me. Like, it's absolute madness that they charge that much money when you can go to the dollar store and you can get that stuff for like $6, man. It's absolutely insane. Because I don't know if you remember, right, especially right before COVID, like they were really trying hard to get people into the theaters. So they lowered the price of concessions to, I want to say it was like $3 to $5 for literally anything you wanted. And that was nice. But I don't know, man, like this is another reason why the box office numbers aren't what they used to be, because it costs you an arm and not only are you paying like outrageous amounts of money for the ticket itself, but you're going in there for the concessions, and it's almost like a $200. You can go to the movie theaters, take your family to the movie theaters for the same almost for the same price that you can go to Disneyland, for half your family. But you might as well splurge at that point. Just go to Disneyland.
But there is, I think, still reason, Josh. You need to go back to the theaters.
Okay. I heard that something big came out this weekend. Why don't you tell me about it?
And that is for Dune Part 2. Dune Part 2 debuted in theaters all across the world. Most major markets. There's still China and a couple other markets left. But debuted to a pretty much projected $81.5 million domestically and almost $180 million worldwide. Not an overwhelming hit, but I guess it's a number that people are satisfied with. Those in the studios are satisfied with a cinema score, over a 90% rating on Rotten Tomatoes, got a very good score on Metacritic. It is all across the board one of the best rated films in quite some time across the board. It has been called everything from the latest version of Two Towers, or also as well, you could say it's the latest version of Empire Strikes Back, Godfather Part Two, any sequel that they've been throwing out that's really well done, they've been comparing it against too, which is a great praise for the film. Because when you check it out, my friend, you will be making comparisons to those great sequels as well.
Yeah, so I'm actually, I don't know, pretty excited to check this one out. I was hoping to see it, sooner rather than later, but it's hard these days to get to the movie theaters.
And I know the expenses is what you talked about earlier, as far as the concessions. I will tell you, you have to see this in the highest quality of settings as you can, my friend. I'm serious. Whether it's XD, I saw it in XD, and I now want to see it in IMAX. This movie, from a visual and audio landscape, is probably one of the best cinematic experiences ever created. And we'll start off with that, my friend.
Okay. All right. Yes, I am seeing here that it's currently leading the box office for the year at $178.5 million. So they dethroned the Jason Statham classic called The Beekeeper. So that's good.
Yes. And they dethroned the haunted swimming pool movie and all that, but it's a $190 million movie, so it does need to make around 700 million before you can start talking about whether it's turning a profit at the movie theaters. But it is probably done enough to elicit a third movie, at least with Dune Messiah, which Denis Villeneuve is writing as we speak, because of the response and plus the way the movie ends, it leads you into a third movie. I will tell you from my vantage point, my review is this. It's funny how all out of work would work. All these critics were saying, well, Dune Part One, it was slow, it was world building. It was the best movie of 2021. It was a Best Picture nominee and got robbed for the Best Picture of 2021. I will leave that there. It is in my top 10 movies of all time. You can go ahead and check out my list. It is up pinned right now on popculturecosmos.wordpress.com. It is in the top 10 movies of all time. This, after all is said and done for me, may or may not top it. That's how good it is. It is right there with it. It took a little bit of a slow burn for me in the first 20, 30 minutes. But once it gets its hooks on you, it does not let go, Josh. It absolutely doesn't let you go.
You mean once it sinks its sandworm teeth into you?
Oh, and funny you should say that, because the sandworm sequences, especially the initial one with Paul Atreides, aka Timothée Chalamet, going ahead and riding the sandworm for the first time, is one of the most thrilling and cinematic experiences I have ever seen as far as the sequence is concerned. It goes right along for me as far as the first 15 or so minutes of Saving Private Ryan, some other famous sequences that you want to go ahead and give a shout out to. But from an audio and just a video experience, I watched it in XD, which is enhanced picture and enhanced sound. And literally my whole chair was shaking, Josh. It was absolutely, and you could feel, it felt like you were actually riding on the sandworm with me. It is that spectacular. It is that amazing. And
What's the theater that, what is that called? It's you said you saw it in XD.
XD. It's like there's regular, there's XD, which is enhanced vision and enhanced size and enhanced sound. And then the almighty is the IMAX, which is the next time, which is the obviously the big, because it was shot in IMAX. So if you want to go ahead and see it how it was originally intended, see it in IMAX 70 millimeter if you possibly can. But since not everybody has that around the corner, you have to go ahead and search it out. But the best way you can see it is with the best experience possible. And I'm just going to say right now, it was a fantastic, once 30 minutes kicked in for me, it was just nonstop, just oohing and aahing about exactly the landscape, the visions, the color palettes, as you say, and as far as everything else in it, the compelling story, the political and religious intrigue back and forth, the way that everybody is trying to manipulate Paul behind the scenes, as far as Zendaya's character, Johnny, her trepidation, her love for Paul, but her trepidation in regards to where he's going as far as his journey and where it's taking him. Then, of course, you have the actual battles on screen itself. And yeah, absolutely a thrilling ride, a monumental moment in filmmaking. And I do hope everyone gets a chance to see it.
You're listening to the Pop Culture Cosmos.
For the latest news and information, analysis and opinions on the Los Angeles Lakers and the NBA, check out the Lakers Fast Break podcast today on wherever you get your podcasts. Yeah. Getting back to Dune, it is just such a work of art. You do need to go see it in the theaters. It is meant for the theaters. I have a nice TV. Sound system's okay. I do not think when I watch it there, which I will eventually, it will do it justice enough. You have to go see this in its intended form. And I know that I sound like Christopher Nolan. I know I sound like Martin Scorsese and all that when I say it. But those films, even the Nolan films, are not as cinematic in my opinion as seeing this film. This film blows visually any Nolan film away. That's Interstellar or any others. Blows them all away. It just absolutely is just a feast for the senses in both the eyes and the ears. And then again, the story gets you through it, the intrigue, and Timothée Chalamet's performance is outstanding, absolutely outstanding. And hopefully he will be honored and given praise at the end of the year for it.
Okay, I got two questions for you. One, how is Austin Butler in this movie? Because I know that he's more of like an artsy cinema house actor. So how is he in this?
He is, Sting was chewing the scenery in his 1984 Dune role as far as him just being hammy over the top. And Austin Butler was anything but dark, evil, he was portrayed as conniving, cunning, and psychotic. I think was probably the best way that he was listed as psychotic in the film by certain other characters, and he plays to the role to its T. And again, his time, of course, as you know from the book, is limited, but it is well worth it. And the fact that, Denis Villeneuve, when you're showing the Harkonnen's home planet and anything going on there in a different shade, black and white, as you see in the trailers, it is absolutely well done and well managed. And it was the right move all along. So yeah, absolutely a great performance by Butler as well.
Because he, seeing him in the trailer, just it sent shivers down my spine.
He is
absolutely terrifying.
He is a chilling individual indeed, and not in a good way.
Yeah. Okay, other question. What characters, and you don't have to spoil too much if you don't want to, but what characters can we return? Because they left a lot of survival in question at the end of it. Do we see a lot of familiar faces?
Oh, you see a lot of familiar faces, including one that I won't say, who appears for just a brief moment that is set up for later on down the line, starting with Dune Messiah, most likely, or even later than that, if they go into Children of Dune and all the rest of the Dune books, as far as if they cover that in detail. Okay. But the characters, for the most part, there are some changes from what I hear in the books and what I've seen in the comparison notes, but for the most part, everybody, as far as the main roster of actors and actresses that are meant to live in the books for a little while longer, whether through Dune Messiah, we'll wait and see, live through here. The ones who perish, or the ones whose ending comes, is the ones that you probably already know if you've seen the movie of the 1984 movie with David Lynch, or you've read the books.
Okay. All right. So going back to the first film, what I really loved about it was the fact that when I watched this movie, I felt like I was reading an H.P. Lovecraft novel. This idea that man is like so minuscule in the greater scheme of the universe. And I don't know, there's something that like just makes you feel very isolated, like we are our own worst enemy, but there are bigger things out there than us. That's how I felt when watching the first Dune movie. Does that feeling like of that like foreboding feeling still resonate through this one?
It does, but in a different way, because it's paced differently. After the first 30 minutes, it's more much more in the way of, as far as manipulation in this film. I think that's probably the best way I could say it. Manipulation behind the scenes as much as everything that's going on in front of it. So it is definitely something where you have to keep your attention aware on what's going on within the story and what's going on behind the story, not just from the standpoint of what you perceive as the good guys and the bad guys, in the, whether you perceive Florence Pugh's character or Christopher Walken's character as the emperor and his daughter, what are their motivations? Or when you're talking about the Harkonnens and their motivations in the film, the Bene Gesserits, the leader of the Bene Gesserits, what's her motivation? Is she, what side is she on? That's, most of that has already been represented in Dune Part One, but that continues there. But it's the manipulation behind the scenes of some main characters who did not show themselves out in the first movie as much, is one of the more interesting turns where this movie goes.
Okay. All right. Like I said, I'm stoked to see it when I get a chance to go watch it, hopefully sometime soon, but I need to know, everybody wants to know, everyone's tuning into this podcast, eagerly awaiting your rating of it. What's the out of 10 that you're giving this thing?
I probably have to give it a finalization probably upon my next viewing, but right now I'm toggling between a 9.5 or a 10 out of 10.
Dang. Okay. So that's it right there. This is this might be your film of the year already. It's only February.
It's only March right now, my friend. But yes, absolutely. This might be the film of the year. This might be the pop culture entity of the year for the Pop Culture Cosmos right here. We'll see, but it is definitely the thing worth watching. But one thing I wanted to note before we head to the break, because I've also got on today a great conversation I had with Don Fobbs from the Mother Daughter Ish podcast for those listening on audio. Before we head to that break, we face the franchise. Is Dune, this imagining of Dune from Denis Villeneuve, is it now a full-fledged franchise? And the reason why I say that there's still a question on if is because the numbers going out, yes, it met its numbers, it's met its expectations, it's done well, but not super. The first movie, because it was day and date on the hybrid with HBO Max, also was the middle of the coronavirus and all that, it didn't do huge numbers because, of course, all those extenuating circumstances. But the target audience has been our age. The target audiences has been above the age of 30. The younger audiences, like, for instance, my daughters, are not as apt to want to see it. Could this be a problem for a film franchise that wants to be a film franchise that is still a little bit in question if it is a film franchise?
You know, that's it's a great question because, yeah, this is based on a novel that, I mean, I wasn't alive when it was written, but it, like, my parents remember
it. I wasn't alive, I don't think, when it was written.
Right. So, like, my parents, I'm sure your parents probably have heard of it or read it, and then, you know, that interest got passed down as the 1980s film came out. And then so Dune has very much existed in the hearts and minds of people for a long time, but it's just not been one of those things that's been passed down in a way that's approachable for a younger generation. But I look at this right now, the way that when the last film came out, everyone's at home, is COVID. So a lot of people watched that movie on HBO Max, like a lot of younger kids, because as a teacher, I actually had a lot of kids do book reports on Dune because they had watched the movie and they had enjoyed it. So I don't think that I don't think they're going to have issues establishing a franchise out of this, because one, you had a lot of kids watching it just out of whether it is because they wanted to or whether they were bored. It's just a time in life, you know, with COVID happening, where people just did watch it. And also, you have Timothy Chalamet and Zendaya in this movie, and those are stars that they're already big, but they're going to be huge in the next few years. So I don't see why this would not have the legs to move into like a full franchise territory. Also, the HBO Max show is still, still in production. So I don't know, man. Like, I can foresee this being the new generation Star Wars, and that might be saying a lot. So don't hold that to me. But I feel like it does have the legs to carry it.
The only concern I have, again, is the numbers coming out from the box office stating as far as who's exactly watching it. So right now, older individuals, sorry, Josh, you're now above 30, so you're going to be considered that older. But us older individuals are watching it. The younger audiences aren't as of yet, according to what the numbers were saying. Now, maybe by the time we get to Dune Messiah or Children of God or whatever else Dunes that they're going to go ahead and do or finish off, or how many member movies they're going to do this, we don't know. But it's going to come down to whether or not that younger audiences will be coming out. Because these are not family-friendly movies per se. When you watch this film, it's not, because it does have violence. It does have love scenes. It does have certain things in there. It's a very hard PG-13, and I'll just leave it at that. But it is something where it's not meant to be all happy, shiny, Star Warsian type stuff on that, as far as that's concerned. We're not here to sell pops to you. Now, it's nice if you did, but we're not here to sell you a whole bunch of stuff at the concession stand or at the gift shop later on. That's what I'm trying to say, as far as it's not meant to be something that you would go ahead and find in a theme park per se the next day. It's something that hopefully, if you resonate with it, you will find in all those outlets. But it's going to take some time in doing so. But it just will not have the commercial theme that Star Wars Marvel does, which is intended. Dune is more telling of a serious story that you really have to pay attention to in order to go ahead and get it to be a part of this franchise. And I'm not sure that's for everyone out there to go ahead and take in.
It's definitely not for everyone, but I feel like it's for a majority of people. Cause look at it, like the world is a very dark place now, man. It's not the days of people wanting like lighthearted stories, I think it's people still want them. Don't get me wrong, but I feel like people's brains have kind of like evolved into needing like deeper meaning and storylines and events that they can't explain. And that's why I think Dune is such a great place to go to that. Also, don't forget that spring break is like this week and next week for a lot of schools. So it's possible we will see, a lot younger demographic going to see Dune. I can't say that for sure, but you know, it is a good time to go to the movies when school is not in session. So I don't know. We'll see. Cause I know Oppenheimer also did not quite hit that 200 million mark, on the opening weekend, but I mean, it slowly climbed over to a billion. So who knows, man? Never say never.
It's going to be dependent. The length and the legs of this film will be actually the key selling point in making this a franchise. We'll keep our fingers crossed that you out there are going to support Dune Part 2. I am going to go ahead and check it out again on an IMAX theater where it was originally intended to be seen on. Josh is going to go ahead and check out the movie as well and give us his thoughts, hopefully, when he does. But really, when it comes right down to it, what are your thoughts out there on Dune Part 2? Please let us know. It is imperative that you let us know your thoughts. Is this the next film franchise you think that Hollywood is going to produce out there? So let us know your thoughts on this, because Josh and I had some other ideas as far as Godzilla, X-Con, Twisters, other ideas, but this is the movie we think that people should stand behind. But do you think people should stand behind Dune Part 2? What are your thoughts on Dune Part 2? Please let us know. PopCultureCosmos@yahoo.com. But my friend, Mr. HappyHoarderCollectibles.com, any last thoughts before we head on out, Josh?
Yeah, I guess I just want to hit one more thing. The future novels in the series, like, it gets really weird, you know? So I don't feel like those are adaptations to be able to make page for page, because it, you know, they have Paul's son.
Remember, Dune was thought to be, couldn't adapt a film in the first place.
Yeah, but you're right. You're definitely right. The 60s and 70s, like, it was a weird time for science fiction novels, because even some of the old like Ender's Game novels, like, those ended up getting really, really weird too. So we'll just have to see where it goes and what people think by the time we get there. Because I mean, it's possible too that with 10 books, you might want to turn some of these into a streaming series on the, you know, one of the bigger streaming platforms they have, like, you know, with Max. So I don't know, but it's got a lot of storyline to be adapted, but it's just how many are they going to get to a point where they're going to have to take liberties with some of this stuff?
I'll tell you what, my friend, we'll find out, but I agree with you wholeheartedly, as I have heard that the stories get weirder and weirder. I have a feeling they'll have to, for a general audience out there, unweird it to an extent, if that makes sense, to make it more palpable to a wider audience. I think that's always the safe way to do things. I know that's not always the blood way for diehard book readers, but then again, you're trying to make it to a larger audience and you have to make some sacrifices. And I think some diehard book readers are still probably mad this weekend with the changes that they made that made this a much better film to see than what I think Frank Herbert intended in the book, because I don't think Frank Herbert ever intended to have this put on the screen, but they have found a way to do so, my friend. And Dune Part 2, really, for Dune Part 1 and Dune Part 2 together as an entity, is really, really hard to beat.
Yeah. I'm, like I said, really excited to see this next movie.
Well, if you have thoughts out there on Dune Part 2, please let us know. PopCultureCosmos@yahoo.com.
You're listening to the Pop Culture Cosmos. Don't touch that dial. Wait, do people still use dials? What is Planet Cool Stuff? It's your ultimate destination for insightful exploration from the realm of pop culture. Delve into the world of movies, video games, toys, cartoons, and visit with one-of-a-kind creators, discover incredible places, and see historical artifacts. Whether it's a toy room tour or exploring the best of pop culture cinema, Planet Cool Stuff has got you covered. Planet Cool Stuff, exclusively on Jinx Esports TV Canada.
And we're back with the show. It's Gerald Glassford. Thanks so much again for watching and listening. Truly appreciated. It is that time indeed. Turn on your TV sets, everyone. It is time for a TV update. And no one gives a better TV update than our good friend, indeed. She is the leader, along with her daughter, of the Mother-Daughter-ish podcast. It is Dawn Fobbs. Dawn, great to have you back on the program. Have you been watching some TV lately?
I've been watching a lot of TV, and a couple of things I wanted to go back and watch because I was like, I think I missed something. You know, when I get into my shows, Gerald, I get into them. Like, I literally transpose myself into the show. Like, I'm an actual paid cast member. So I have been watching a little bit on Hulu, a little bit on Netflix, a little dabbling on Showtime and HBO. I have been all over the place and loving it because when I get bored with one thing, then I'll go watch. Like, some things that I wanted to go back and watch, like, for example, Wayward Pines with Terrence Howard. I wanted to go back and watch that because it just had some meaning that I wanted to understand. And then The Prodigal Son on HBO, I wanted to go back and watch that because I really liked those characters. But then the new things that have been coming on, I kind of am just kind of holding over, waiting on Bridgerton to come on. You know, I'm all excited about those. But boy, we can get into some of the new things that came out as well.
I will say, though, it starts off with, for me, the remarkable success and the critical ratings, the critical thoughts and the critical views of Shogun, the miniseries that has just debuted on FX. And a lot of people are talking about it. It looks like it's going to go viral as far as a mass medium, as far as a show that can't be missed. I've seen 10s all over the place. IGN recently gave it a 10. I've heard nothing but great things from word of mouth, from friends who have already started watching it, and from random people out there on social media. Your thoughts? Is this something you might ever get into? Because Shogun was a miniseries back in the day, based off the book adaptation, of course. But now FX has decided to renew it for a new generation, and it looks like it's going to be a big success.
I don't know. I mean, for me, it has to, like, the name has to catch me, the characters has to catch me, and then the first 15 minutes of something has to catch me. So I haven't tapped into it yet. But when you mentioned it a couple of days ago, I thought to myself, well, I'll go see if it would be something that I'm interested in. I mean, there's been a few things. Even my daughter have called me and asked me, you know, she called me 2 weeks ago and said, Mom, did you ever watch Lovecraft Country? And I went, Lovecraft, where do I know that name from? Where do I know that name from? And I read a lot, Gerald. So I was like, where do I know the name Lovecraft from? And then I thought about, it's the H.P. Lovecraft guy.
Yep.
And I was like, I didn't like him, so why would I like his show? But she said, but Mom, it has a lot of sci-fi stuff. You love that type of thing, and you love that supernatural and all of that. And I told her, I said, you know what? I'm going to go on YouTube, and I'm going to ask YouTube to give me a synopsis of what this is about. And the synopsis that it gave me was just amazing. So I might like Shogun because there are some things that I like, and then there are some things that I don't like. But then there are also those things that I'm like, well, I didn't give it a try yet. Are you enjoying Shogun?
So far, the episodes have been outstanding. So it looks like something that I think people do need to catch.
Okay. Well, I'll check it out. Who's the producer?
Producer? Well, it's through FX. Let me go ahead and see if I can get you the information on that as far as
Shogun.
But when it comes to what you said with H.P. Lovecraft and Lovecraft Country,
yeah,
that's the first major breakout for Jonathan Majors, who unfortunately looks like his career is going to be not going in the right direction for obvious reasons. Of course,
I didn't know he was in it.
Yeah,
but he was. Look at the synopsis where the guy was doing the breakdown, because it only had two seasons, I think, and the guy was doing the breakdown on it, and he was saying, okay, basically this is what it's about. He went all the way back into H.P. Lovecraft and the books that he did and what he talked about and his, you know, antics of whatever he did. And then he said, you know, how it was ironic that the movie was made. And I was like, oh, Jonathan Majors, I didn't know he was in that, because I only know him from the superhero type of movies. Like, I didn't see him in Creed because I don't watch that. I know all about it, of course, but I just didn't watch it because I'm not really a Michael B. Jordan fan. So I didn't watch the movie, but I didn't know he was in Lovecraft Country. But my daughter just happened to say, you know what? I know you like, you like that supernatural, you like all of that kind of stuff. And I'm like, you know, I actually think I would have actually liked it.
Well, I have a feeling if you try to decide to give this romantic tale in the midst of feudal Japan, this miniseries a shot, the producers of the series, I'm not sure if you'll know any of the names as far as Aaron Smith, Hiroyuki Sanada, Eriko Miyagawa, Jamie Vega Wheeler, Tom Winchester, the executive producers, Edward McDonald, Justin Marks, Rachel Kondo, Andrew McDonald, they're all veterans of the TV landscape. So, you know, it comes from a good crew. It comes from it looks like it's going to be very, very good for FX coming off the success of The Bear. Hiroyuki Sanada as Lord Yoshi Toranaga. That is somebody that I do know. You probably have seen him in so many different movies because he's such a well-known character actor.
Yeah.
But he's taking the lead role in this. And I can't wait to finish it out and see what happens with Shogun.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, you know what, Gerald? It's so funny you and I have these conversations. And a few months ago when the strike was going on, we were just talking about that last year of what the implications of it was. And I think it just hit me last week when they said that Tyler Perry was getting ready to build an $800 million studio to produce movies, but there's some new software app type of thing that's going to come out where you don't even have to, literally, you can phone it in. You can tell it, okay, make it rain on the scene. Okay, make thunder and lightning. Okay, make the characters kiss. And like those characters will do whatever you want it to do. And it's not actually really happening because it's all AI. So he canceled his whole studio production of an $800 million studio because he's like, well, wait a minute. I don't have to actually use real people, so I don't really need a studio. And I said, this is exactly what the strike was all about. It's about the AI. It's about the nobody's going to want to hire people. Nobody's going to hire a writing team. Nobody's going to want to build a state-of-the-art studio. Nobody's going to want to collaborate because they don't have to. They can just like sit in a closet and phone it in. And like Tyler Perry says, he makes his movies in less than 10 days, and that's when he's using humans. So just imagine a good tutorial on that new software, how he's going to be able to use it without even having to use characters, because he can just make those characters up and, you know, use other people's likeness that have given permission for you to use their likeness on these apps and don't realize they've given their life. I think the word they use is we can use your likeness into perpetuity. I'm on none of those apps because when I see the kind of language, because I read the instructions, when I see that, I don't join those type of apps. So I now get it. I get what the strike was about. It's like, okay, we're going to all be obsolete and lose our jobs as actors and actresses. That's what they're saying. And so I'm just thinking about as far as the movie landscape, because there's already so much CGI and so many things in what we watch, and it's kind of wild.
I will tell you, though, there are other platforms that I think you need to check out. And I've obviously Netflix is one of them. We talked about it before the show.
Yeah.
Where the price hike is in the not too distant future again. Avatar, The Last Airbender. Speaking of remakes, like Shogun is a remake from an earlier miniseries. Avatar is a remake or a new envisioning of Avatar, The Last Airbender, that people kind of like want to like wade and gloss over the horrible movie that was made in the last decade by M. Night Shyamalan. So, like,
oh, my goodness.
We won't count that. We'll just go ahead and take this. Has gotten okay reviews. People seem to be enjoying it. It is number one as we speak right here on Netflix. So your thoughts on Avatar, The Last Airbender. Just M. Night Shyamalan. Just sorry. We're not going to count your movie anymore.
I just could never get into M. Night Shyamalan. Now, I'm going to tell you what turned me off about.
Be prepared for his daughter because his daughter has a movie on the way.
Oh my God. When Avatar 1 came out, let me tell you why I didn't like it. Because every single person that watched it said, oh my gosh, I just wanted to live where the Avatar people live. I just wanted to be them. I was transformed into that world. And I thought, that's so not reality. So I'm not on board with it. So I didn't see Avatar 1, Avatar 2, Avatar Way of the Water, and none of that stuff. And I really like Zoe Saldana, who started with that franchise. But I just could not muster up my feelings to care enough to go and see that movie. Now, there are some movies that, I mean, I'm in no matter, I don't care if they put it on a streaming service and it's $50, I'm going to watch it. And that's, you know, Planet of the Apes is coming back May the 10th. So I'll watch that. I hope it's going to be streamed on one of the streaming sites. So I don't have to go to the movies, but there's a lot I'm looking forward to. Like, for example, tomorrow, Kate Winslet, I love her. She's going to be in a new movie and it's called The Regime. And it's one of those old.
It's a series, by the way.
Yeah, it's an old type of series that kind of reminds me of Outlander and all of that. So I'm all in on that one because I like the time period that it's in. I like Kate Winslet, I like some of the other actors that are in it. And every snippet that they've been showing, it's just caught my attention every single time. I'm like, I can't wait to. So I had to go look it up last week to see, okay, when is it coming out? And it said March 3rd. I went, okay, let me finish what I'm watching because I've got three more shows, which I'll do tonight so I can be ready for Kate tomorrow.
Well, I will tell you what, HBO Max is riding high right now.
Yeah.
Not only because of the fact that they've got Dune Part 1 still on HBO Max. It just finished its run on Netflix. If you've not seen Dune Part 1, I highly suggest it, even though you don't have to see it before you see Dune Part 2, which is now available out in theaters. It's going to get a lot of money. It's the big, huge release. I cannot wait to see it. I'm actually going to, by the time everybody hears this, I'm going to actually already have seen it myself. But I will say, though, on HBO Max, like you said, The Regime with Kate Winslet's coming out. But I don't want to forget about a show that HBO Max themselves often forgets about because they don't advertise it very well. It's in the second season. It's absolutely brilliant, absolutely captivating. It deals with the underworld, the Japanese underworld, the Yakuza. It is Tokyo Vice. Tokyo Vice is an absolutely outstanding show. It's already in its second season. It's going on right now, and I hope people give it a chance.
And they've been doing a lot of advertising for it because when I was rewatching The Prodigal Son on HBO, every time it would go to the commercial part at the bottom, it would be just like complete silence, no music or nothing. It would just be the pictures up there and the Tokyo Vice. And I kept saying, huh, you know how they say you have to see a piece of advertising 7+ times in order for it to catch your attention? I promise you by that 6th or 7th time, I went, Who is that? Why is that writing in red? Why? And I kept saying, what does this say? Tokyo Vice. And so now it's implanted in my head. You got to check it out because it was on every single piece of advertising, no matter what you were watching on Hulu. I'm sorry, on HBO. It was the first commercial every single time before your actual programming would come on. It was the first commercial. So, and before your next episode would come on, it was the first commercial. So they have really fed it into the fabric of the marketing that they're doing. So that might be why it's done so well, because the picture that they put up there is pretty intriguing. Like, okay, what's going to happen? It looks like it's going to be some fun, you know?
Well, for people outside of HBO Max, they haven't been able to really communicate that season is underway, but I'm glad for HBO viewers that they have.
Oh,
the
yeah.
reason why I say is this deals with a American who mm-hmm. gets a job at the major newspaper in Tokyo. Mm-hmm. And one of his main tasks that he tries to go ahead and cover for a story is the Japanese underworld, the Yakuza, the gangs fight that all are fighting with each other, and how the corrupt police and the good side of the police that's trying to investigate all this and the bad side that's trying to work against them. And yes, just the sheer politics of everything in play. And it's just absolutely captivating, and I hope people give it a chance. It is 2 seasons. It's only about 12 episodes in, so hopefully you will give it a chance and catch up with that on HBO Max.
Yeah, so Tokyo Vice and Shogun will be 2. I'll probably check Shogun first, then Tokyo Vice. And I definitely am waiting on The Regime tomorrow. So by the time I catch those, it'll be sometime next week because I know... Mm-hmm. know how many episodes this regime is going to have, but I am ready for each one of them because it's the time period is right in my wheelhouse of what I like to watch, like the Bridgertons and Outlander and all of that that I like to watch. It's like right there. And I'm waiting on Outlander. I think we're on season 9 at this point. And guess what? I was so excited about a week or so ago. I noticed that they put the next season of The Blacklist up now. That one I've been in since day one. I'm a day oneer. When it was on regular TV or whatever in the beginning, I think it was on either NBC or Fox. I'm not sure. NBC, I think. I was in from day one. I love every character in that show. And now that they've even, you know, sometimes when they kill off a character, you get kind of sad and you think that, well, it's not going to go that way. Nah, I can tell that the fact that they killed off a major character and now her daughter is left behind. I can see the grooming. And when I say grooming, I mean the good kind of grooming, like teaching her how to be aware of danger and teaching her how to be the next killer on there, that type of grooming. I can just see how she's being trained to be her mom, which I was so sad when she was killed off of the show. But this last season threw me for a loop because it left us with the most harmful to me cliffhanger that I'm just like, this better not one. It better not be the final season. Number two, it better not be what I think happened. And number three, like y'all got me all worked up and I'm ready. So Blacklist it has held its excitement. It has held its amazing characters. They've kept the ones that they know we need to see stay there. But now that they've even put a little kink in that little chain, it's like, wait a minute now. Without that person, I don't know. You're messing with me now. But Blacklist has never, I will say this, of every single thing I ever watch, Blacklist has never disappointed me. Never, ever.
Thanks for checking out the PCC, you know, the Pop Culture Cosmos. We'll be back in one moment.
If you're in the Las Vegas and Henderson areas and are looking to buy, sell, or trade the best in classic or current video games and pop culture collectibles, there's no better place to go than Retro City Games. From Xbox to PlayStation, Nintendo to Atari, the great crew at Retro City Games provides the best place to go for all your gaming options. Stop by their two awesome locations in Henderson and also the Las Vegas Strip, or follow Retro City Games on Facebook and Instagram for all the latest deals and new items. Without a doubt, there's no better place to go for your gaming needs than your friends at Retro City Games. Check out what's been going on with the Pop Culture Cosmo Show and the PCC Multiverse.
People are just losing their minds trying to consume Marvel products right now, and I don't blame them. This is some of the best entertainment you can get on TV and big screen right now.
If something's going to be successful or not, they look at the mentions, they look at the likes, they look at the retweets and the tweets and the subtweets and the tweet tweets, and they look at all of that to say, okay, this is actually going to garner a lot of attention.
Is it going to be enough, though? I think the fish out of water syndrome might be enough for somebody like us, because it's going to be hilarious to watch two stoner kids we saw barely make it through high school now live in a society that they fully don't understand because they've been stuck in a decade and never came out of it.
Facebook stars, not ninja stars, okay? I know how some people take things literally, so don't throw ninja stars at us, but like the Facebook stars, click on those. That's what we want.
That's the Pop Culture Cosmo Show.
And the PCC Multiverse.
Catch our shows on Worldwide Radio 7 days a week and wherever you get your podcasts. Okay. Fair enough. Yeah. But you said you watched Prodigal Son recently. Is that correct?
I did, because, again, my daughter and I, we were just talking about movies or whatever. And she said, Mom, did you ever watch The Prodigal Son? I was like, no, what is that? And then she tells me, go over to HBO right quick, she said, and look at, you know, see if it's something that you would like read about it or whatever. And I go over there and Gerald almost fell out of the bed because we were on the phone. I was, you know, laying down. And I noticed that the characters in there, first of all, I'm going to call them by their character name. So Melanie from she played with Kerry Washington in, what was that presidential show? Whatever. I forgot. Anyway, the president's wife, she's in there. And then I see the guy from another show that was on Showtime, I believe. And then I saw all these people that I'm like, those are my favorite characters. And I told her, I said, when did this come out? She said, maybe about a year or two ago. She said, but like, it's not a gory killer, stabber, because you don't watch that. She said, but this one, I think you will like it because it's kind of a crime scene, whodunit.
You were talking about Scandal. for the shoot.
Yeah, the prison watch. So she said, Mom, it's kind of like one of those, the call is coming from inside of the house type of things. Like, that family is the weird one. She said, you need to watch that one. I watched the first episode and I went, how is it that I did not know about the prodigal son? All of those actors and actresses are my favorite I've seen in other shows. And I'm like, how did I not know? And then the on the second season, I noticed they even brought in Catherine Zeta-Jones. I was like, how did I not know about this show? So I went back and just rewatched. I mean, I went back and watched that one, but Wayward Pines, I went back and rewatched it because I was in on it on the first. But and then I got my daughter to watch Wayward Pines, and she was like, oh yeah, I really like that one. And then the most amazing thing happened for me in February. I'd been telling my daughter for a year. During COVID, there was a show that came on Sci-Fi Channel, but I don't have Sci-Fi. But for some reason, they teased us real good and they put the first three episodes up on YouTube. And I could never find it again. And I mean, I'm like searching. I'm looking. I'm on Google saying, where can I watch this? It was Resident Alien. So I've been talking about it for a year. And then all of a sudden, I said 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, I said, let me see what's new on Netflix this Friday. And I almost fainted. I almost fainted when it said Resident Alien seasons 1 and 2 are up. I started all the way back from the beginning because I didn't want to miss anything because I'd already seen the first three episodes, but that was on YouTube and that was 2 years ago. I started all the way from the beginning, watched it again, and I was all in. I mean, all the way to the end. Now, they did get an episode 3 that came out a couple of weeks ago on Sci-Fair, but on Sci-Fi, but they have. I was so disappointed when I went to Netflix News and they said they're not going to upload episode 3 until 2025. So that's my other gripe about them with Blacklist and with Outlander. Like Outlander right now is on Netflix, but the last two episodes, you got to go over to Stars and watch it, which I do have Stars and watch it. They never put it up to Netflix. They only did season 1 through 6 and they didn't do 7 and 8. So now they're getting ready to go into 9. So I'm glad I have Stars because waiting a year to watch a show that's already been out is kind of ridiculous. So now I've got to wait all of that time for Resident Alien, unless it becomes popular by some reason and they go ahead and upload episode 3. But I have been just finding some things that, one, I've been waiting for it to get over on one of the platforms I have, but then also some of the shows that I didn't watch in the beginning, but now I'm like, okay, I'll give it a chance, and I actually end up liking it. So Prodigal Son, I would have to say, was one of those that, oh my gosh, I didn't watch it, but now I watched it and I like it.
There you go.
So that might be Shogun or Tokyo Vice. I haven't watched it yet, but I might get into it and go, oh, wow, I like this, you know?
Absolutely. So looking forward to hearing your thoughts on that. It is Dawn Fobbs. You got to go ahead and check it out, what she does each and every time out on the Mother-Daughter-ish podcast. Before we head on out and before you tell everybody what you and your daughter have been up to on your awesome show, I do want to mention that a show that I put as one of my worst shows of 2022 has come back. They got a new showrunner, and this seems to me like it's one of the biggest turnarounds ever in quality for a television show from one season to another, in Halo on Paramount Plus, because Halo was absolutely horrid the first season and it was universally panned. But now, again, they got a new showrunner in there because Paramount heard the cries, even though there was still quite a bit of an audience for it.
Right.
It turned it around. Everything seems improved. Although the Master Chief character is the one you see behind me. He never has his uniform on. That's still an issue with Halo fans out there. But still, the acting has been substantially better. The CGI has been substantially better.
Okay.
The story has been more compelling. And it looks like it's a show that actually is worth watching. Your thoughts on Paramount Plus, if you'll ever go ahead and get around to catching Halo in the sci-fi universe?
I'm not sure, but I have a couple of things on Paramount that I'm just like, I've got on my watch next list or something like that. But one thing I forgot to mention to you, now that you talk about, you know, your worst show, but now it's kind of getting a new life because they changed it around. Last Friday, Tyler Perry had a new show that came out called Mea Culpa with Kelly Rowland in it. And I don't watch Tyler Perry movies. I've never watched one of his plays. I don't watch his series, but I only watched this movie because Kelly Rowland was in it. And I wanted to support her, you know, because she's a singer and all of that. So I went over and I took one for the team. It was very tough to do it because his movies are just so typical. And so you can figure out what's going to happen from the moment the credits are rolling in the beginning to tell you what the name of the show is. You already know what's going to happen. And it was just the same. You know, I said, okay, I gave it a chance and it's the same. It's kind of like I tried to give Jordan Peele a chance and I went to go see a couple of his movies and they were okay. I went to go see that last one about the alien. It was the most horrible. I banned him and said, I'll never watch anything else. And that was why I told my daughter I didn't watch Lovecraft Country because he was a producer on it. And I knew it was going to be full of bull. So I didn't watch it. And so I hope that Kelly Rowland gets another chance with another movie because her acting is impeccable. And I told my daughter, I want to see her in the next Black Panther. I'd like to see her over there because she's a good lead role player. And so since Angela Bassett is no longer going to be in because she got killed off, I hope that Kelly Rowland goes to something bigger and better because she's a great actress. But just wanted to say that just because that came out freshly last Friday.
Sounds good to me. But before we head on out, please go ahead and give everyone the rundown on what you and your daughter are doing at the Mother-Daughter-ish podcast.
We've had so much fun in the last couple of weeks. We talked a little bit about personal and professional. And the reason we talked about that is because of the big case that's going on in Atlanta. We did a little bit of talking about that and knowing how to handle yourself in a personal and professional setting. We did a podcast yesterday, of course, about leap year because leap year only comes every 4 years. So we talked about leap year and the significance and why it happens and how it happens and looking forward to the next one in 2028. So we've just really been taking some of the headlines that are majorly happening and we've been incorporating them into our own kind of way to be able to help people to with their own personal and professional things that we're doing. My daughter's turning 30 next week, so I'm taking her on a surprise party. I can say where we're going here because she won't see this before we leave, but I am taking her on a surprise trip to Costa Rica. So we're going to actually be filming from there because we'll be there for 7 days. So I'm excited. I'm not even telling her where I'm taking her until we get to the airport on Wednesday. So I'm excited to be able to do that and to actually film from there. And we have some very significant places that we're going to be filming from. So we are still just having a really great time with our podcast. We've got some new t-shirts that we're getting made. We just got a new signature for our t-shirts and we're having a really, really, really good time.
Sounds awesome indeed. Please go ahead and make sure you check out the Mother-Daughter-ish podcast. Wherever you get your podcasts, Dawn Fobbs and her daughter with some amazing stories, amazing conversation, and you can find it available right now. Please give it a 5-star review, like us, 5-star review for our show and, of course, the Mother-Daughter-ish podcast. Well, Dawn, always great to have you here. Looking forward to our next TV update from you, but any last thoughts before we head on out?
My last thought is that I think that the Academy Awards is coming up. Is that correct?
In the not too distant future, yes.
So we'll probably talk about that in the future. But other than that, I would just say enjoy all the good TV watching. If you want to check out Regime with Kate Winslet, it starts on tomorrow. So you have some time to kind of get yourself together to get ready because I'm going to be ready.
Well, the Academy Awards, they're going to rename it the Oppenheimer Awards because Oppenheimer should take most of the actual awards right now. I'm here in Vegas. They are the betting favorite.
Oh, well, there's always somebody that's going to, you know, get it. So anyway,
and I watched it. It's pretty good. That's all I'll say.
Everybody that I've heard that watched it, they liked it. I haven't heard anyone. I've heard a lot of people talk about it, especially the week that it debuted. There were so many YouTube shows on their opinions. I watch a lot of those opinion type shows, but I haven't heard anybody said, oh my God, it was horrible. I hated it. No, every person has said that they liked it, or there were even people who said it kind of educated them on a few things that they didn't even know of. So I haven't heard anything bad. So probably deservedly so they're going to get those awards, you know?
Absolutely. Although it was kind of weird being an R-rated movie and being shown in the car lot I was at looking for a new car. And it's right there in front of the where the customers are there for waiting for their service to be done. That was a
good idea.
Yeah, that's not a good idea. I was like, okay.
You're just like not pleased with that being in the open public, you know?
Nah. Yeah, not the best idea. But then again, what can you say? It is the Academy Awards coming up here. Looking forward to hearing your thoughts on what's upcoming in the world of television right here at the Pop Culture Cosmos.